remembered.
Everyone, we're going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. Thank you for being here this morning. We have a work session we're going to do very quickly for introduction of a committee measure. And then we have a public hearing scheduled for Senate Bill 301. It does say work session, but we won't be moving the bill today. We're taking testimony today on that bill. So with that, we'll open up a work session for the possible introduction of committee measures. Senator Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, may I possibly enter one? Then?
Yes.
Okay. What in the heck? Sorry. Okay. I move to introduce LC 1357, dated February 7th, 2017, as a committee measure.
All right. Senator Thatcher moves that we introduce LC 1357, dated 2017, as a committee bill. And as our disclaimer, those who are this vote today is not as to on the merits of the bill. It's only to get the bill into the process to allow it to be considered in this 2017 session. There's no guarantee that the bill will even come back to this committee or whatever committee it is assigned to that it will be heard. This is just a process to allow measures to be introduced for consideration, and that's it, for consideration in the legislature. So, is any discussion regarding the motion? Any objections? So ordered. And we'll close the work session on for introduction of committee measures. Open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 301. Whitney, why don't you give us the overview, please?
Thank you, Chair Brzozinski, members of the committee. This is Senate Bill 301, which was brought to us by the Joint Interim Committee on Marijuana Legalization. Senate Bill 301 makes it an unlawful employment practice for an employer to condition employment on refraining from using a substance that is lawful in Oregon during non-working hours. There are two exceptions to this restriction. One is for when there is a bona fide occupational qualification, and second, when the restriction relates to the performance of work while impaired. Finally, this law would not apply if an applicable collective bargaining agreement prohibits the off-duty use of the substance.
All right, thank you. So I have at least one list. I think there's going to be another list of individuals who want to give testimony today. I'm going to start off with Lee Berger and Beth Crichton. If you two would please come forward.
Good morning, Chair Brzozinski, Vice Chair Thatcher, members of the committee. My name is Leland Berger. I'm the chair of the Portland Normal Legislative Committee, and I'm here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 301. I submitted written testimony that included two packets of information. The first packet is the report from the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to the legislature concerning whether there should be any change in the DUI law. I helped draft the medical and Measure 91, and in Measure 91, we required this, and as did the legislature in House Bill 3400. And the report makes clear that neither the science nor the technology supports a per se DUI limit. And that's relevant for our conversation because one thing I think that we can all agree on is that a urine test, which is the test that's given in DUI investigations where it's a controlled substance is suspected, and in pre-employment testing and sometimes in firing decisions, is a urine test. And all a urine test does is establish prior use. It does not establish impairment. And can't. So basically, it identifies the person as having some time in the past, over the last week, month, year, whatever it is, had used cannabis. It identifies the person as a cannabis consumer. The second thing is that when we met with some of you were concerned about, how can employers do employment testing? And I mentioned that there's an app for that. It's called My Canary. And I attached the science information about that. It's not an application that would work in the field in the DUI context, but it would work in employment because it's a series of questions that the user responds to and establishes a baseline, so that if a worker were to take this test upon employment and then show up and the employer was concerned that they might be impaired, which is one of the exceptions to this anti-discrimination bill, then they could administer this app and it would help with that. We were also aware in speaking with legislators that there was some concern about and also in reviewing some of the testimony presented by those who opposed the bill, that there was a guarantee in Measure 91, an assurance that nothing in 91 would change the employment laws, and nothing in Measure 91 changed the employment laws. One thing I've learned, having come to this building since 1999, is that no legislature, nor the people acting as a co-equal branch of the legislature, can bind a subsequent legislative session or subsequent initiative. So that, for example, we made crystal clear that if a city or county wanted to opt out of the licensing scheme for adult use licenses issued by the OLCC, that there had to be a referendum. Legislature, of course, at the request of the Association of Counties and others, changed that. Three times we said it doesn't affect the Medical Marijuana Act. The legislature, in fact, changed that. And I think where we are is that 2 years after legalization, it's time to end this level of employment discrimination against people based on the fact that they are healthy adults who choose to consume cannabis while not at work and not coming to work impaired, and where their employment where their use doesn't affect a bona fide occupational qualification, such as having a commercial driver's license, things like that. The last thing I want to say is that I think also you'll hear from the opponents that there's a concern about whether this bill would be preempted by the Federal Controlled Substances Act. It would not. The Federal Controlled Substances Act includes a anti-preemption statute, and the courts have consistently required that it actually allow something that or enforce something that federal law prohibits, and this doesn't do that. It's been the purview of the states for some time, as I understand this area of the law, for the states to regulate businesses within their states and to determine in this context what is or is not an unlawful employment action, or excuse me, practice, an unlawful employment practice. And so I think the legislature is entirely within its rights to create an unlawful business practice, especially where, as here, there already exists for tobacco. So it's incredible to me that a person not be hired or be fired because of off-site tobacco use, but because or if the person chooses to smoke what I prefer to smoke, that they could be. It's just wrong, and Senate Bill 301 gives the legislature the opportunity to correct that wrong. And unless there's any questions specifically for me, I want to yield to Beth Crichton, who has the expertise really in employment law and can assist the committee with any questions you might have on that. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, we'll take Beth's testimony, then we'll come back for questions for the panel. Beth?
Good morning, Chair Przanski and members of the committee. My name is Beth Creighton. I'm with the law firm of Creighton and Rose. I've been practicing employment law on the plaintiff's side, employees only, for the last 20 years. I am the founder and the president of Oregon's chapter of the National Employment Lawyers Association, which has a goal and a mission of advancing the rights of employees in the workplace and making a more fair and just workplace for all employees. I'm here today to talk about this bill because as an employment attorney, I'm getting regular phone calls at least once a month since the legalization of marijuana. And from employees who have been terminated for no other reason that they come up with a dirty UA after, you know, months, weeks of after having used cannabis, having it not in their system, never being intoxicated or impaired while at work, and they're fired nonetheless. I have represented two individuals mostly because I can't represent most of the people who call because they don't have a cause of action. One was there was a drug test that took place when the employer knew that my client was using medical marijuana after he had complained about health and safety violations in the workplace, the use of a blowtorch near spray paint, which is very dangerous, as you can imagine. The other one was an individual who was denied unemployment benefits because he worked for a telecommunications company who fired him after someone backed into his parked work vehicle, and he came up with a positive on the drug screen. He had been at a party weeks before, ate a brownie, had no idea that it was altered, and ended up losing his job over that and was not granted unemployment. So we've appealed that decision for him. It's still pending in the Court of Appeals. So the goal with Senate Bill 301 is to protect other substances that are legal under Oregon law from being a cause of termination or not hiring people for a particular job. Currently, tobacco is protected. So if you use tobacco offsite, employers are not permitted to fire you because of that. With the onset of legalized marijuana, marijuana should not be treated any differently. In addition, in my practice, I have seen, although more rarely, people who are terminated for having opiates in their system that are related to legitimate medical condition, and they're being told you can't use have any opiates in your system while you're on the job. So if you take a pain pill at night to sleep for your condition that is debilitating, you're not permitted to go to work the next day. So, and then also, I'm aware of at least one employer in Lake Oswego who has a prohibition on alcohol consumption at all, on duty or off duty, which, you know, being the microbrew state that we are, I think would be very difficult to find employees if you're prohibiting people from having their beer on a Friday night after work. So Senate Bill 301 would protect employees from those random, arbitrary, non-work-related types of terminations or discriminations. And it would also, because of the protections that are afforded with the bill for employers, it allows employer to terminate someone if the performance of their work was impaired. So if you have somebody falling down drunk in the workplace, you don't have to keep them on duty. You don't have to keep them as an employee. You can still prohibit, as an employer, the coming to work while you're impaired on any type of substance. Also, the bona fide occupational qualification relates to things like if there's a federal contract and the federal contract and the federal funding requires a drug-free workplace. That would be a bona fide occupational requirement that an employer could then prohibit drug use in the workplace. Additionally, commercial driver's licenses have that same restriction. Random UAs, in order to have a commercial driver's license, I saw some testimony with the hospital association. If they receive federal funding that requires a drug-free workplace, this bill would not apply to them. It would fall under that bona fide occupational qualification exception. And then the third section says it doesn't apply if there is a collective bargaining agreement which prohibits off-duty use of the substance. So there is a county actual arbitration decision that Lane County had received that reinstated someone who was fired for using medical marijuana, and the arbitrator found that even Lane County's prohibition of drug use did not, in fact, satisfy the good cause termination standard. So under Lane County's policy, it said if there's medicine that has been prescribed by a doctor or under a doctor's care, then that was a legitimate exception to the drug-free workplace. And so that employee got reinstated. So I think that this is a workable solution for the problem, which is employees who are getting terminated for their lawful duty, for their off-duty lawful activities, and also balances the employer's rights.
All right. Questions for either on the panel? Senator Manning first.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you this morning for your testimony. I have a couple of questions. First, you did mention Lane County, a case that happened in Lane County. What I'm particularly interested in is, has there been any kind of correlation or anything that compare Senate Bill 301 with states like Washington or Colorado or even Amsterdam, perhaps?
I can help with that. I can tell you, Chair Przanski, Senator Manning, there is a bill in the Washington legislature that's had a hearing that would end discrimination against workers who were medical marijuana patients. So it couldn't be, as I understand the bill, it's similar to ours, except that it's limited to off-site use by medical patients. In Colorado, I know that there's a normal chapter there that's also working on a bill, but nothing's been filed yet.
Thank you. Senator Thatcher.
Thank you. I remember you talking about an app, and I'm thinking as an employer, if would it be seen as discrimination if you said, hey, you, come over here and take this little test here? Or would you have to necessarily test everyone who, you know, drives a vehicle for the company or, you know, operates dangerous machinery? I mean, how would you look at that as an employer 2 years from now when you say, well, they were singled out for use of this app? And then I'm just wondering if you've thought about something like that.
Senator Przanski, Vice Chair Thatcher, I have. I think that it's the kind of an application that an employer could require a baseline reading from all your employees. What I heard from speaking with legislators when Ms. Creighton and I went around speaking with folks is, well, what do we do if we suspect someone is impaired? And if there is a reasonable suspicion that someone is impaired, requiring, and help me if I'm wrong here, Beth, but requiring them to then retake this test to see if they are impaired, I don't see how that could be construed as discriminatory or unreasonable.
Yeah, I think it's the same for the current drug screening now. I mean, you can test someone either randomly or you can test them with probable cause, so to speak, a reasonable suspicion of being impaired on the job. One thing I wanted to add, just in response to Senator Manning's question, is that there's been some misconception that the Emerald Steel case has created some sort of federal preemption issue in the state of Oregon. As I submitted in my materials, that particular case was limited to the application of whether or not medical marijuana could be viewed as allowing medical marijuana could be viewed as an accommodation for a disability in that particular case. And under the ADA and under Oregon's disability law, the ADA excludes people who have who are engaged in illegal drug use. And because under the federal law, under federal law, it's still an illegal drug, and the ADA follows federal law, and Oregon follows the ADA. That's kind of how they got to that conclusion. But the Supreme Court was very clear in that decision that that did not preclude the legislature from acting to change the laws in the state of Oregon to protect those who are using medical marijuana.
If I could add, our intention in this bill is to overrule Emerald Steel. This is Emerald Steel fix, as far as we're concerned. Additionally, I neglected to say in my opening comments that we tried to be as thorough as possible in the exclusions to this rule that we came up with. We'd certainly be willing to entertain additional exclusions if members of the committee thought there was something that we had overlooked, some situation where it wouldn't be fair to an employer to require that they not discriminate against consumers qua consumers.
Follow up.
I have a follow up on back to the app thing.
Have
any employers used the app as a defense that this accident that my employee got into here and caused damage to your stuff was not because of drug use because I use this app? Would it be legally defensible?
Chair Przanski and Vice Chair Thatcher, you know, I don't know the answer to that question, but in preparing for testifying today and providing the written testimony and in receiving information about the app, My Canary, I did receive email addresses for two of the developers, and I can certainly get those to you. I'll do that when I get back to Portland this afternoon, and so that you know, you could make inquiry directly of them. They would know, and I don't.
Yeah.
Would that be helpful?
I think so. That could be helpful. I had one question about, you mentioned that in the bill, well, it does say in the bill that a bona fide occupational requirement would be exempt, but that could be loosely interpreted. It's kind of vague because I don't know if that's been defined anywhere, and yet defining it could leave out, I mean, I don't know how you would necessarily exclude employers that are from this requirement to not discriminate based on drug use, legal substance use. So anyway, I'm just wondering if that has come up in your discussions. There probably are numerous situations where employers they're just worried about the liability, and like I mentioned, if they use it an app, that's great, but sometimes there are employees that start out from their home and in the company vehicles to go tend to whatever for the company. They're not being directly supervised at that moment. They are a supervisor. There are just many situations, and you mentioned federal contracts. That's one. It could just be contracts in general where whoever, you know, is issuing the contract is requiring this.
So
I mean, there are just so many situations.
Chair Przanski and Vice Chair Thatcher, we certainly, in meeting with legislators on the committee and outside of the committee, encountered this concern about insurance. As to what developments there are in the law about what it means to be a bona fide occupational qualification, I'd yield to Ms. Graydon.
So I believe that the term bona fide occupational requirement is, in fact, defined in the BOLI regulations, administrative rules, is my understanding. Now, the term bona fide occupational qualification, that would be something that we would have to have defined in the BOLI regulations as well. But I mean, there's, you know, if someone says, you know, the job is, you know, sweeping the streets, and I'm making it a bona fide occupational requirement that people be drug-free, I mean, that's just not going to fly in court. There has to be reasonableness. It has to be reasonably related to the work that's being done. Whereas if they say, you know, my job is to fly small aircrafts, and that might be a different scenario, because if the FAA requires pilots to be drug-free, then that would be a bona fide occupational qualification.
So let me just follow up on your question about the app and stuff. You know, today, it's my understanding an employee can be required by the employer when there's an accident to go to a lab and be tested. I think you could use the same analysis for that type of app. Then it comes into a play for court or for administrative hearings, however, where it's going to be the venue, whether or not there's relevancy to whatever's been done. And then there could be potential challenges as to the viability of the test that you have required the employee to go through. But that would be something that would be determined, you know, through the court or through a hearing administrator as to, one, the relevancy and the validity of the test itself. But could it be used? I don't see why it couldn't, because at this point an employer can require an employee to go through some type of test to see whether or not they are impaired. So, but the question as to whether it's a scientific-based test, that's something that has not, as far as I know, regarding the app. This is one of the first times for me to hear this, whether it's been actually true tested as something that would be definitive proof.
I guess I would hate to be the first guinea pig in that situation in court. So,
well, at some point, you know, it's just like the you take the toxilizer. I mean, all of those type of tools that we now have and we use on a regular basis had to start somewhere as it being proved to be viable and something that was certainty, scientific-based and all that. Other questions for either on this panel? Hang on. Senator Lithicum.
I think I'd like to push back a little bit with regard to the simplistic illustration of the individual sweeping the streets. Streets are dangerous places. We just had the move over law discussion. We've had the discussion about an automobile striking a vulnerable user, roadway user, et cetera. An individual sweeping the streets has a pole and who knows whatever else in his hands and other paraphernalia, trash cans or garbage sacks, et cetera. And any number of accidents could occur. So I agree with the illustration. Sounds simple, but when you get into the definitions, it's rather complex. And for the liability issues, if I had a team of street sweepers, I would want them to exercise as much care and concern for themselves as well as all of the store owners and businesses that they were, you know, performing the task for. So I just want to be careful with drawing distinctions around, oh, that job's not dangerous, because statistically it probably is dangerous.
All right. Any other questions?
Just to respond to that really quickly, and that's why this law doesn't say, you know, you have to let everyone work while they're high. I mean, that's why this law, in fact, says that you don't have to allow the performance of work while impaired, and you don't have to keep employees on when they're impaired. So, I mean, that's kind of why I was using that illustration.
Irrespective of whether it's a bona fide qualification for the job or not, you can't be impaired. And, Senator Przanski, I had included in the materials the science section of the app, and my review of that suggests that it would meet the Dobear-O'Keefe test for scientific evidence admissibility.
All right. Senator Thatcher.
Maybe we should just call out specific occupations, like perhaps telemarketers and newscasters. They can apply this law. They just annoy people at dinner time. So.
Yeah. All right. Thank you all very much for coming forward. I have another panel of proponents I'm going to call up, then we'll hear from the opponents. At this point, I'd like to have Scott Holgate, Heather Keel, and A.J. Schroff. Schroff? Want you three, please come up. So good morning to all. If you have not given testimony before, what I need you to do before you give your testimony is please put your name on the record and then give us your testimony. What we'll do is we'll take all the testimony from the three of you, and then we'll have you opened up, you know, for questions at that point. So who'd like to go first?
I'll go first, yeah.
All right, thank you.
So I'm just going to read from a prepared statement here. My name is Scott Holgate. I'm 57 years old, and I live in Independence, Oregon. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for this opportunity to
speak. Mr. Holgate, that microphone, if you'll just bring it down just to make sure we're getting you covered. Thank you.
Anyway, I'd like to thank this committee for the opportunity to speak for my support concerning the passage of Bill 301. I sit before you with my scarlet letter. I guess maybe it should be a green letter on my chest. You may not see it, but it's there. I'm a caregiver under Oregon's medical marijuana program for a family member, and I tested positive for marijuana at my place of work at the end of December 2016. This was during a random urine analysis test, and I was terminated. I don't want to paint myself as a victim here. You know, I understand a company's concern with any kind of employee substance abuse while at work. I don't use marijuana personally, and I made a conscientious decision to be a caregiver out of concerns for a family member. When I got hired for the job initially, I was a caregiver with the same responsibilities, and I was able to pass the requirements of the initial hiring process. As far as the drug screening went, so I really have no explanation for failing during the random urine analysis. I did start cooking for my family member because I was concerned with his smoking and maybe inadvertently through tasting the cooking or whatever. But I do want that to be known. Now, at my place of work, I feel I did my job well. I was always on time, committed to my own safety and the safety of my coworkers. In fact, I was told at the time of my termination that the reason for being terminated had nothing whatsoever to do with my job ethics or work performance. I worked 10-hour days with 3 hours of travel time every day, so dedicated more than half of my day to the job. I guess what I ask you is, should an employer also be able to dictate what I do with my time away from work if it is within the legal constraints of the state law? The doctor I talked to who represented the urinalysis testing company could not tell me at what level I tested or if I was even under the influence at the time I was tested. My explanation of being a caregiver who is around and quite often handles marijuana while conducting my duties as a caregiver fell upon deaf ears. Now, I fully understand that had I been injured or caused the injury of a fellow worker, there should be an investigation as to what may have caused it, and then the proper action should be followed. I also understand the need for testing of any illegal drugs that may affect an employer's ability to do their job responsibly. During break time, I would listen to these younger, the youth of today, talk about doing harder illegal drugs over the weekend because apparently they're not detectable in a person's system for as long as marijuana is. I don't think we want to send this type of message to the youth. So now, as I'm trying to get employment for the industry I'm well qualified for, I have this major hurdle of disclosure for something that is legal, at least at the state level, to overcome. I've already been turned down for two positions that I can't help but feel was due to the positive testing for marijuana at my previous employer. I guess there is irony in this. I did interview for a job with the state of Oregon's Juvenile Detention Center, and a group of us during the interview process was told that they did not test for marijuana during their pre-employment drug screen. I just think this is one career where that kind of testing should be done, as far as them being examples for the kids. So with all that having been said, I urge you to make to pass Bill 301, get rid of the stigma of marijuana use or being around it, and educate employers that there really is no different than using alcohol while away from the workplace. So with that, I want to say thank you for listening.
All right, Scott, thank you. Yeah. Who'd like to go next?
I'll go. My name is A.J. Scharf. I am an Oregonian from Lowell, right outside the Eugene-Springfield area. I'm here to support SB 301, which would prevent people who legally use marijuana during non-working hours from being fired for doing so. I have coelic vomiting syndrome, also referred to as CVS. It is an increasingly recognized disorder with sudden, repeated attacks of severe nausea, vomiting, physical exhaustion that occur with no apparent cause. The episodes can last from a few hours to several days. Episodes can be so severe that a person has to stay in bed for days, unable to go to school and work, and may need treatment at an emergency room or facility. During episodes, after an episode, a person usually experiences symptom-free periods lasting from a few weeks to several months. The attacks can happen in three different phases: prodrome, which is sweats, turning in stomach, dizziness. It's that knowing that you're going to be sick feeling, vomiting, and then recovery. This disorder has had devastating effects on both my personal and professional life. I was working for a company deconstructing mattresses for recycling. Living with CVS, I have tried every treatment imaginable. It wasn't until I started treating with medical marijuana that I was able to effectively manage my condition with this life-altering disease. My employer was okay with that for several years. Then, out of the blue, decided it was no longer appropriate. They said they would not recognize my medical marijuana card any longer, and any subsequent drug use and test needed to indicate that I was no longer using marijuana or I would face disciplinary reactions. They gave me 3 weeks to stop using my medical marijuana for my condition. Not wanting to lose my job, I went to a doctor seeking alternative treatments. I was put on several medications such as Ontracetone, Ratidine, Phenagan. Those three were just for the nausea. Ibuprofen, Tryptotan, and Narco, which is a narcotic, for the abdominal pain and migraines that follow. Unfortunately, these medications did little to treat my condition, and because I was now taking narcotics, I was not able to perform functionally and normally. During this time of heavy meds, I lost almost 40 pounds and wound up in the hospital to treat my CVS. Come to find out, I was allergic to one of the drugs, which caused me to vomit daily. After another, the drugs made me pass out. I tore open my abdominal wall and esophagus from vomiting and was vomiting blood when I was admitted. They had to hook me up to an IV just to get my nutrients back up to the normal level they need to be. As a result of these side effects, I told my employer I had no choice but to discontinue all these pharmaceuticals and go back to my medical marijuana use. It was the only thing that was helping my CVS. My employer told me that I could not continue employment with them if I continued to take medical marijuana, and I was be able to pick up my final paycheck the next day. I felt they were leaving me no choice. I was forced to choose and pick between my livelihood or my health. On top of it all, my unemployment was denied because my employer argued that my termination was justified for refusing to comply with the conditions of employment. Since gone back to using medical marijuana to treat my CVS, In these following months of losing my employment and restarting my treatment of medical marijuana, I am back to my normal weight. I have stopped vomiting on a regular basis, and I am functioning on an almost normal level. Well, as normal as I ever will be living with this incurable disease. If I could have stayed on the treatment in the first place, I believe I would have continued to function and do my job. I thank you for taking the time to listen to me today.
Thank you. Heather?
Hi. My name is Heather Kell. I'm a lifelong Oregonian who went to Portland State University and graduated with a bachelor's in finance. I've worked all over the Portland area in a variety of size companies, from startup to large multinational corporations. I have a resume that shows a depth of skill that increases over the course of my career. I have been a medical marijuana patient for the last 5 years, and recently tried to obtain employment working with a recruiting agency in Portland. The interview went really well. The client wanted me to start in a matter of weeks, and the headhunter asked if I would be willing to submit for a pre-employment drug screen. I said, I object, due to having a medical condition for which the prescribed treatment could be an issue. She assured me it wouldn't be a problem, and I went ahead and submitted the sample. I ended up not getting the job, as I tested positive for THC, which I expected, and I told the lab to include in my results that I was a medical marijuana patient. I feel, even though it's legal in the state of Oregon, awkward to disclose private medical information without cause. And not only did I lose out on the opportunity for this position, I could no longer work with the recruiting agency. And I did not know at the time of submitting the sample that I would be precluded from all future employment with the agency. This is one of the biggest recruiting agencies in the nation. And over the course of the last 5 years that I've been a medical marijuana patient, I have held various positions of responsibility. I have processed hundreds of thousands of dollars in payroll checks. I have managed a $56 million operating expense budget. And I've done all of these things while showing up on time with a positive attitude. And I've never been reprimanded or had cause with any employer over being impaired or making errors in my work due to being a medical marijuana patient. I am very strongly in support of Senate Bill 301 because I believe we need additional protections for employees, for working Oregonians, whether they're medical patients or they choose to relax with cannabis as an alcohol substitute on the weekends. It's a legal substance in the state. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, all three of you, for your testimony. Questions for anyone on the panel? Senator Denver first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Scharf, what kind of work were you doing that caused you to lose your job? And was it something where, a sense that you were impaired could have been harmful or detrimental?
No, sir. I was recycling mattresses. My company was completely aware of my card. I was called in for a urine analysis based on a policy change, not for any disciplinary action. In 3.5 years there, I had never had any disciplinary action.
And follow up, do you know why they instituted that change?
No, sir.
Thank you.
Any other questions for anyone on the panel? Again, thank you all very much for coming forward and telling us your stories. I have another panel I'm going to be calling up, so if y'all would step back, thank you. So this panel is going to include Jim Westwood, Rob Ovette, Bob Russell, and then I understand Laurie Satinspell would like to also join them, so we'll need to just bring a fourth chair up. And while they are assembling up here, I know there's other people that have come in the room. Are there other people who did not get signed up on the sheets who would like to give testimony today, either for or against Senate Bill 301? And if you do, just raise your hand so I can note that we have other people. All right. Jim, I think you may be leading off from what I understand.
That's my understanding, too, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I am Jim Westwood. I'm senior counsel at Stoll Reeves Law Firm in Portland. I am here on behalf of, in general, the Oregon business community. You've received, I think just later this morning, a follow-up or a revised position paper that we posted yesterday with additional supporters on it. But so I'm appearing on behalf of those members of the business community, large and small. I have been arguing employment and constitutional cases to the Oregon appellate courts for over 40 years. I am past chair of the Oregon State Bar's constitutional law section. I presented an amicus brief to the Oregon Supreme Court in the Emerald Steel Fabricators case, with which you're familiar. And a shout out to Senator Dembro's constituency. I'm a coach of the national champion Grant High School Constitution team. Senate Bill 301 has been presented to you as a pretty simple extension of employee protections, but it is much more than that. It is far more complicated, and I hope I can help you through some of those this morning. If Senate Bill 301 were enacted and it were challenged constitutionally, what would the result be? Well, in my opinion, it would be preempted and nullified under the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution as presenting an insuperable conflict with the Controlled Substances Act. The result in Emerald Steel Fabricators was that the Oregon medical marijuana law, Oregon disability statutes, did not measure up. What is the test? Well, is the state law an obstacle to, and these are the words of the United States Supreme Court, as the Oregon Supreme Court quoted in Emerald Steel Fabricators, is it an obstacle to implementation and execution of the full purposes and objectives of the Federal Controlled Substances Act? Well, here's how Emerald Steel Fabricators helps us. It doesn't control this case. I think that the Supreme Court in Emerald Steel, in a footnote, actually said it might be possible for the Oregon legislature to tailor an accommodation, a way to accommodate one's disability that would require treatment by medical marijuana. That's not the point here. I think it was a bit disingenuous, however, of a previous testifier to say that the purpose is to over, purpose of SB 301 is simply to overrule Emerald Steel Fabricators. It does far more than that. The Oregon Medical Marijuana Act merely authorized marijuana use, and it was nullified in that regard by the Oregon Supreme Court. The Controlled Substances Act has a purpose of controlling the traffic in controlled substances and to overcome drug abuse in the country. Senate Bill 301 would run into the Supremacy Clause because it would protect marijuana use, preventing employers from disincentivizing marijuana use by their employees. It would necessarily facilitate by protecting the possession and use of marijuana, and that would be the direct obstacle. So in my opinion, Senate Bill 301 cannot be salvaged. It is preempted by federal law. There are other federal statutes that, if not flat out preempted, at least present a lot of plain impossibility to lawyers. You heard about the Drug-Free Workplace Act, and I thought initially the attorney who was testifying to that recently said, well, if you have a federal contract, that's a bona fide occupational qualification. I think she walked that back, and I'm glad she did, because certainly the regulation itself is not a bona fide occupational qualification. Anyone, any employer in the state of Oregon with a federal contract would have to comply with the Federal Drug-Free Workplace Act. And here is where we get into the problem of defining impairment. Senate Bill 301 makes an exception for impairment on the job. But it is engrafted onto a Tobacco Use Act, where there really is no question of impairment. One is not impaired by using tobacco off the job. Is one impaired from off-the-job marijuana use or other permitted drug use? And the answer is, we just don't know. The science seems to be, yes, it can be. But the problem is there is no protocol, there is no system in place that lets us understand when or a person is or is not impaired by the presence of THC in that person's system. So the burden has shifted. And an employer now will have to wait until perhaps the grocery store customer has slipped and fallen on that piece of lettuce that the employee didn't sweep up because he was impaired. Or perhaps a security officer was off doing something else and an assault happens. That's how you find out that there's an impairment. The burden, again, shifts to the employer. It's almost impossible, barring something like that happening, to be able to say that the employee is impaired, but the employee may well be. We just don't know because we don't have the science yet to be able to tell when one is impaired with THC in the system and how much or for how long. There is no accommodation provided for in Senate Bill 301. The employer simply may not limit employees' off-duty use of permitted substances unless it causes that unidentified and perhaps unidentifiable impairment. So let's think about some others. You heard about alcohol. That would be indeed covered by this. An employer might, for valid non-religious reasons, want to make sure that his or her employees did not drink on the job or off the job. I want teetotalers working for me. Well, the reasons that brought about in the Progressive era in Oregon in 1914, the initiative that brought about prohibition in Oregon, were very much in evidence at the time. You know, alcohol abuse is a major problem, and if an employer would just as soon not have drinkers working for him or her, that may be a valid choice. This law, Senate Bill 301, would seriously interfere with that. What about an organic garden store owner? I don't want any of my employees using Roundup or pesticides in their gardens. It may seem a little unusual, but an employer may want to make sure that the employees buy into the idea behind the business. Can't do that. So it becomes, in effect, in reality, an unlawful employment practice to require an employee to obey federal law or to judge as impaired an employee who concludes that an ALJ, who is able to persuade an administrative law judge or a jury that he or she may have been impaired despite failing the drug test. These are problems that come up for employers that will be insuperable. So to summarize, Senate Bill 301, number one, I believe would not pass the preemption test under the United States Constitution. But number two, for good, firm policy reasons, I think Senate Bill 301 should not be enacted either. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Who's going to go next? Rob?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Ovett, Legal Counsel Association of Oregon Counties. I won't repeat any of what you said, and I'll keep my comments brief. I'm not unsympathetic to what you all heard from the folks that testify in favor of this bill. I also am in agreement with Mr. Berger that there is no scientific basis right now for a per se standard of impairment with regard to cannabinoids. I know Washington State has established one in state law for DUI, but there's no scientific basis for it. It's just a random number. So that's where we agree. Where I agree with my colleague to the right here is that I believe that Senate Bill 301 is clearly preempted and unconstitutional by Emerald Steel. And I heard Mr. Berger say, well, this bill would reverse Emerald Steel. Unfortunately, you can't reverse federal supremacy clause preemption. States just don't have that power. Only Congress can fix the Controlled Substances Act and its preemption. I think the facts of Emerald Steel are real instructive, because what happened was an employer in Lane County, Emerald Steel, fired someone for their essentially off-duty use of medical marijuana. And the Bureau of Labor and Industry stepped in and said, you can't do that under our anti-discrimination laws. And Emerald Steel said, this is federally prohibited conduct. People can't lawfully do this under federal law, so you can't make me comply with your state law that says I can't discriminate against people for the use of marijuana. And the Oregon Supreme Court agreed. The Oregon Supreme Court said federal law trumps and the supremacy clause kicks in. I see Senate Bill 301, if anything, as broader than what the Supreme Court was dealing with, and I think the whole thing falls. But my final comment is this. I am not generally adverse to symbolic laws that can't be enforced. Sometimes you want to make a policy statement, even if it's unenforceable. For example, in marijuana context, the chair may recall we worked on a bill a number of sessions ago that told the Oregon Pharmacy Board to take marijuana off Schedule 1 under the State Controlled Substances Act, supported that bill. It really didn't have any meaning. It was symbolic and a reflection of the fact that Oregonians voted overwhelmingly to support medical marijuana in 1998, so it didn't make sense to have it as Schedule 1 controlled substance in state law. But it had no real impact. But Senate Bill 301, unlike that statute, would cost our members real dollars, significant dollars, to litigate and defend. And ultimately, it's my strong opinion, would it be all preempted. So in this case, we don't want to see a symbolic law put on the books that would not be enforceable, but that would cost taxpayers' money. So I'll stop there.
Who's next?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations, and we've already heard about some of the issues with commercial drivers, and because we are regulated by the federal government, and the federal government has preempted the states, irrespective if they're operating in intra or interstate commerce, as far as truck driver regulations are concerned. And Title 49, Part 40, contains the drug regulations that our industry is subject to. We are required to have pre-employment. We are required to have post-accident, random and reasonable suspicion tests, which includes cannabis. Matter of fact, if a driver has more than 50 nanograms per milliliter of THC in their test, then they fail. That's grounds for immediate dismissal. And this bill would put us in conflict with the federal regulations. And I understand there's an attempt to exempt us under the bona fide occupational qualification, but that seems awfully vague to me. If this bill does move forward, we would certainly request that there would be some more specific language that deals with not only truck drivers, but airline pilots, railroad engineers, and many other transportation workers that are subject to federal drug testing requirements, and the states are preempted from changing that in any way. That concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. And Lori.
Chair and members of the committee, Lori Satinspiel for the Oregon School Boards Association. I kind of want to take it down a level to the students in Oregon. I was going to supply written testimony today and not appear, but it's about safety for us. We've got bus drivers who deliver students to and from all day long. Then we have bus drivers who transport students to all activities, extracurricular, on weekends, which would be considered, maybe considered off-duty hours. You know, for bus drivers, the benchmark for alcohol is the 8 hours before you're on shift. And we've heard discussion about how we measure impairment with marijuana use. And that concerns us and how we might figure out if someone is impaired. An impaired classroom teacher would be of great concern if we had a medical issue and we needed help. I mean, if response, reaction, how do we measure those kinds of things? We have some accommodations. If a person has been out, let's say back surgery, and they're taking medication, narcotics for pain, and they return to work, got a doctor's note, if there's some sort of narcotic they're still taking, the district then puts them on paid administrative leave until they can come back without that narcotic in their system. That would cause use of a substitute, again, more cost to that that situation, but we already accommodate that situation. The My Canary app that was mentioned, I'm a little concerned about litigation. If we use that without enough knowledge about it, we have property casualty coverage for insurance, which includes risk and things like this that we go into court for. Again, we could be spending some time in court litigating, should this bill move forward, certain cases that would, again, take money that we can't spend on classrooms and students. One more issue for us, actually a couple, emergency clause. It goes into effect upon passage. That would possibly put that into effect during our school year. And time to make adjustments to policies, it could potentially trigger a bargaining, impact to the bargaining situation. And if the contracts aren't open, we have to go to the interim bargaining, which is a shortened timeline, 90 days. So just to put that on your radar screen. And finally, the federal funding. We do receive federal funds. And I called ODE to check on this just to be sure. Districts have to certify that they have a drug-free workplace on some of these monies they receive for their contracts. So that's where I want to leave it at that. Thank you.
All right. Questions for anyone on the panel? Senator Thatcher?
Yeah.
Okay, just asking.
This is for any of you, but if, you know, fast forward, let's say there is a scientifically accepted way of testing impairment, would that change any of your testimony?
Chair Pruzanski, Senator Thatcher, no, because what needs to happen is Congress needs to amend the Controlled Substances Act and no longer preempt us. And really, they've needed to do that for quite a number of reasons. One, because now we have, what, 27 states that have legalized medical or recreational marijuana. We have banking problems. We have cash in the marijuana system. We have Section 280E of the Internal Revenue Code that needs to be amended. So Congress really does need to change marijuana policy. So none of my testimony would change because, in my opinion, Senate Bill 301 would clearly be preempted and just symbolic. And only Congress can fix that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Thatcher, it wouldn't change mine either. The states are preempted by federal law, and the test basically is for presence. And at least we strongly support the federal drug testing requirements that our drivers are subject to. It's a safety issue. I don't think anybody wants truck drivers out on the highway that are impaired by any substance, much less marijuana.
All right, so I've got a few questions. I guess this is really for Jim and for Rob regarding the preemption. So I understand, Rob, you think we just did a symbolic bill when we passed a rescheduling cannabis to Schedule 2 in the state. So I guess I'd like to have a little dialogue as to on what basis is that symbolic when the state, and under my perspective, under the 10th Amendment, has states' rights, and health and safety is one of the provision areas that we have the ability to act. And so I guess I'm trying to figure out why would we be able, as a state, to have our own controlled substance schedule for drugs if it's just symbolic, if it's truly that we are at the whim of the federal government for whatever they say, and we cannot exercise our rights under the 10th Amendment.
Chair Pruzanski, great question. I think you have to separate the 10th Amendment into its doctrines. So under the anti-commandeering doctrine of the 10th Amendment, Congress cannot tell you as a legislature what to enact or not enact as state law. Our downscheduling of marijuana under the State Controlled Substances Act was symbolic only because you, prior in 2005, disconnected marijuana from our schedules. So it was symbolic under state law. In terms of what Congress can and can't do, why we have preemption in Emerald Steel is not because of the anti-commandeering doctrine. It's because federal law makes it a prohibited substance to use, period, the end. And state law cannot compel an employer to tolerate conduct that is federally prohibited. So that's where the preemption doctrine that my colleague recited, essentially the Supreme Court black letter law that was adopted by the Oregon Supreme Court in Emerald Steel, that's why that applies. So it's not that we are required to make marijuana illegal under state law. No, we could actually repeal every law in ORS that referred to marijuana. It could be just a free-for-all. And Congress could do nothing about that. Where preemption comes in is when we try to affirmatively compel another actor to do something or tolerate something that is prohibited under federal law. So that's the difference. Mandating that someone essentially tolerate a violation of federal law is different than essentially changing state law to allow things to occur under state law.
Mr. Chair, the 10th Amendment certainly does give the states broad latitude to operate. That's what was intended. That's what the anti-federalists had hoped for in proposing these. However, they also railed against and lost their argument regarding Article 6 and the Supremacy Clause, from which I read that the laws made pursuant to the Constitution by Congress are binding, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. In other words, law of the land is the Controlled Substances Act, and if the state, in exercise of its 10th Amendment rights, goes too far and presents an obstacle to the full execution and performance of the Controlled Substances Act, then that's when the Supremacy Clause kicks in. It did in Emerald Steel Fabricators, and I am well convinced it would in a challenge to Senate Bill 301 as well.
Right, thank you. So other questions, I guess, is really around the presence of THC in someone's body. We know dormant THC is what you see or what you've learned from a urine test. Blood test, on the other hand, my understanding is that you can actually identify whether or not the THC is active through a blood test. So for the employers, I guess that's one of the things I would like for a little bit more discussion on, as to hearing from your perspective, at least what I thought I heard, was there's no test that really would distinguish between active versus inactive THC. And then I want to follow back up with for medical use.
So Chair Przanski, if I could clarify, my testimony was that, and my belief is that there's no scientific basis to determine impairment based on the level of THC in someone's blood. And I think that's a correct statement today under current science. I just don't think you can say someone has X amount of THC, active or inactive, in their fat or in their blood or whatever, and say they're impaired. There's just no scientific basis for that, as far as I can tell. We're just not there yet. Frankly, I don't know if we'll ever get there. But that's my understanding. In terms of whether we can test for active or inactive cannabinoids, I think we can do all of those things. It's just drawing the conclusion that someone's impaired or not. I don't think there's any science to support that.
No, I understand that, but wouldn't you agree that if you could actually demonstrate that someone actually had some THC that was active in the body, that you could then circumstantially argue that they had an impairment based on that, as compared to something that might show something in their fats and cells from 30 days use out?
So Chair Przanski, I think you've just exceeded my knowledge base. I don't know that I would ever make such an argument based on what I know, but I may not know enough.
I would certainly second that. I'm no scientist in this area. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. And if I gave the impression that I understand the difference between active and inactive THC, I didn't mean to give that impression.
Do you understand or recognize that there is actually a difference between active and inactive?
I'm aware that there is a difference, but that's about the extent of my knowledge of it. And I would suggest that, if this bill does go forward, that the science needs to be brought out, because my understanding is that it's very, very rudimentary. The problem has been studies of marijuana impairment can't be done with any federal grants, and that's about the only way that these studies are done. So it's a catch-22, unfortunately. But the science, as I understand it, just is not there.
Mr. Chair, from the trucking industry's perspective, the federal regulations also prescribe all of the testing protocols, and your analysis is the primary one used today. Mm-hmm. And their blood is used occasionally if there's an accident and the person is incapacitated and there's no possibility of getting a urinalysis. One of the things that the trucking industry is moving towards is away from urinalysis to hair. And hair actually will indicate over a longer period of time whether there's a presence of not only THC but the other prohibited drugs that truck drivers cannot use.
Any questions, follow up? Senator Manning.
Thank you, Chair. This is a very, very complicated issue here. I do, because Oregon has legalized recreational marijuana use, and also because there is medical marijuana use, we have put ourselves in a very unique situation. I also understand the employer's position of what if, but the intent, as I understand this, is that since Oregon has legalized recreational marijuana, and we know that alcohol is legalized, and we know that tobacco, if we're going to go there, is also legalized, the degree of activity, and I think the chair brought it out, a great question about how do we determine whether or not if a person has used marijuana, recreational marijuana, which is legal in the state, 5 weeks ago, and it still shows up in a urinalysis. I'm hearing now that we're talking about testing hair follicles. I'm really, really concerned. You know, now we're talking about going into perhaps unreasonable search. So that's a whole different story now. While I do understand the proponents of this bill, what the intent is, I do have some other questions too about where we want to go with this. This is this is the first time that I've encountered something like this where I have more questions. While I do agree with the intent, whether or not we can actually answer that, or I can actually answer that at this point. So the chair has brought up some great questions, and I think that maybe I don't know if we're going to require some more work in here, maybe some more collaboration between employers and unions and all those stakeholders involved with this. There are concerns, but this is I'm undecided on this one.
All right, thank you. I think the other thing, I guess more for the record, we've heard testimony regarding individuals that have been authorized in this state for use of marijuana or cannabis for medical purposes. And it's always difficult for me sitting in this position where I've sat before having individuals that have lost their employment or not even able to function in life, including vets who have come back to this state after serving our country, and they can get any opiate they want, but they're just laid out on their couch. But they can have marijuana, they can actually regulate their PTSD and other things, and here we are not accommodating them. And we're seeing a shift here. And it seems to me that maybe the states need to continue to do what they've been doing, and that's leading and moving forward, because it seems to me protections are falling down to the side of where you got good individuals who are making decisions for whatever reasons to do what they're doing, and it's being held against them where they're not impaired or it's not been demonstrated they're impaired. It just shows that there's some substance at this point that appears to be inactive based on the test that we're relying on, and we're basically cutting people out of livelihood.
May I speak to that, Mr. Chair? This,
you may.
I've been touched by that testimony as well. I mean, how could a person not be? But Senate Bill 301 may not be the answer to that particular question. I read now from footnote 12 of Emerald Steel Fabricators, in which the majority, the court, says, we express no opinion on the question of whether the legislature, if it chose to do so, and worded Oregon's disability law differently, could require employers to reasonably accommodate disabled employees who use medical marijuana. That may be the fix here, rather than this blanket, let's make it an unlawful employment practice.
I understand, Jim, and I appreciate that. I'm hoping that means that you'd be willing to sit down with me and others to see what we might be able to fashion to maybe accommodate those.
At your invitation, I'm glad to do it.
Any other questions or comments? Senator Dimbro first, and then Senator Manning.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just following up on that last line, I feel like, we're painting with too broad a brush, in this area. You know, Emerald Steel, I think the decision was justifiable given the kind of work that was done there, that fabrication work. I can understand there being concerns about safety, in that case. But there are a lot of jobs out there where it really seems that it's not justified. Really, there's not a risk. The woman who worked in recruiting, for example, I wish, and it sounds as if maybe there's some legal impediments to doing so because of federal preemption, but I wish that we could, get at this in a more narrow manner.
Senator Manning?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just want to just put on the record, if there's going to be further conversation about this and that you're going to be leading, I would throw my hat in the ring to also be there. I would also ask that all relevant opponents and proponents be there so that it's open and everyone that has a stake in there has a voice at the table.
All right. Thank you. Senator Nelson, come.
I was glad you pointed out the footnote 12. My question, after hearing our chair describe the scenario that he sees as employment practice problems here in Oregon, and footnote 12, my question was going to be, can there be a carve-out? The three individuals with the most powerful testimony were all employment-related individuals. The other two individuals were more focused on the legality or law or their legal opinion. And do you think it's possible to carve out medical marijuana opportunities that don't impact what we've done in our state with recreational marijuana?
Is that question directed to me?
Yes, because I'm wondering how a blood test can tell the difference between medical and recreational and this little card that I carry or don't carry.
Given the preemption law that was articulated in Emerald Steel Fabricators, Justice Kistler is no fool when it comes to constitutional law, certainly. And the fact that he did drop that footnote, or at least the majority dropped that footnote, indicates to me that perhaps the court thinks it's possible. That's above my pay grade, I'm afraid, Senator. I don't know, but it's worth thinking about further. I really haven't thought about it enough.
And Mr. Chair and Senator, I would agree. What the footnote says is that there might be a narrow opportunity to carve out something to protect medical marijuana cardholders from employment discrimination, possibly. Doesn't mean it's not going to be litigated. It'll get litigated. There's no doubt, because it could very well be preempted as well. But in my opinion, 301, as broad as it is just clearly preempted.
All right. Thank you all very much for your testimony. I really appreciate you coming forward. I have at least one other gentleman that wanted to give testimony. Please come forward. Is there anyone else now that would like to give testimony today on Senate Bill 301?
Good morning. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I am the political director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. AWPPW would support this bill if the bill contained language that protected bargaining unit workers as well. We're concerned because, as some of the members would call it, voluntary incarcerment, you lose your constitutional rights when you walk in. So we feel that would be a hit against us as unionists. To me, this issue is very, very large, but I think it's over-dramatized. Looking at the federal situation where half the incarcerated people are for minor possession, you know, and it's very expensive. And then a lot of these people are young black people who get the mandatory sentence for marijuana when, you know, my experience in the Navy was that I came across people that drank and were violent. Marijuana smokers seem to be a bit aloof, if you will. I take safety very seriously. When I was a working member, I chaired it. I believe it. I believe in the idea of peer, you know, review by the members, all people on the work site. All safety rules are written in blood. And at 18, I saw a picture of a guy who lost his legs to the knee. He had fallen in molten metal. So those that work on the floor take safety very easily. But on the other hand, if we are citizens of this state and it is legal, then our members off duty, off shift, should have every right that every other Oregonian has. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Mike, thank you very much for your testimony. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 301. And I want to appreciate everyone that came forward today and gave their stories and being cordial to each perspective. So with that, that concludes our work, I believe, for today. We're scheduled to be here tomorrow at 8 a.m., and so we're adjourned.